Blog Talk Radio. Liberal Fix is brought to you by Blue Push Media, news important to progressives and liberals across America.
Good evening and welcome to this edition of Liberal Fix Radio. I'm your host, Keith Breckus, broadcasting from Montana, and I'm joined again tonight by my co-host and the producer of the show, Naomi Minogue in California. How are you doing tonight, Naomi?
I'm doing well, Keith, thanks. Just getting ready for back to school out here. We start up on Monday, so I have to get back into a different routine, but I'm doing well, and how are you doing out there?
I'm doing well as well. We have a little bit of smoke in the air from fires out west, but nothing real close to here, so hopefully it'll clear up soon and winter, or, you know, fire season will end soon and people won't be in too much trouble. And one thing I was going to mention, today we will spend most of the hour talking about the immigration issue, which has been brought to a fore by Donald Trump and others and brought back into the center of the public debate. But before they do that, there were two other things that for our listeners I just wanted to mention that they're probably aware of, but we want to pay respect to one person living and one who's passed away that have been in the news in the past week. First of all, since the last time we had this show, I believe civil rights icon Julian Bond passed away. So our condolences to his friends and family, and we just want to pay tribute to his legacy. And the other big story, I guess, that was pretty heart-wrenching for people who watched it. I didn't see it, but I heard it was quite a story. It's, of course, former President Jimmy Carter, who's done wonderful things since leaving the Oval Office as well, announced that his cancer had spread to his brain. And, of course, we wish him and his family and the people who care about him well, because certainly a man who's done many great things, and it would be a shame. You know, hopefully he can continue to do great things for what time he has left, and hopefully they can arrest the cancer and he can continue to press on for a while longer. Any thoughts on Naomi?
Well, yeah, the news on President Carter is very heart-wrenching, and I did see the news conference that he gave at the Carter Center, and it was very touching, and in typical President Carter style, he showed a lot of humility, a lot of grace, a lot of dignity. Certainly looks like he's handling the news as best as he possibly can, and he seems to be more concerned with his wife and his family members, but he seems to be handling it with optimism, or at least with the least amount of fear, I guess, as he can muster, and just being very graceful and generous to the public about being very open and upfront about what's going on, and, you know, letting everybody know exactly what course he's taking. And so he's being very generous with that at a time when maybe some people would just kind of, you know, shut the doors and handle it with, you know, within their own family. But he's being very classy and very, very generous. And yes, of course, the passing of Julian Bond, very, very sad. You know, both men are very, very, they're role models for those who are in the, you know, who love and have a passion for social justice and for making things right amongst all men and women everywhere. So both men are, you know, role models and people we definitely hold in high esteem in the liberal community.
Sure, absolutely. So we wish their families well, and in the case of President Carter, wish him well as well, and hope that the cancer can be slowed or stopped or whatever they can do, because it sure is nice to have him around. And, you know, certainly he's done a lot post-presidential career as well, as doing some good things while he was president as well. Changing gears a little bit, or talking about people who are very unlike President Carter, I guess, for lack of a better transition. One of the big stories that has come up this week that has been an ongoing story but is now right back in the center of the debate, despite the fact that illegal immigration or people coming from across the southern border, it's actually down to one of its lowest points, I mean, since in many, many years, and there's actually more more people, for example, leaving the country to go back to Mexico than coming in from Mexico for the first time since the Great Depression, and it's been that way for about 3 years now. I think that started in 2012 or maybe 2011. But reality doesn't matter for our political debate in this country. Often it's what people bring to the forefront, and the Republican Party has been demonizing immigrants for quite some time, but it's really taken a new life with the Trump candidacy. And of course, earlier this week, Donald Trump sort of doubled down, I guess you could say, by calling for an end to birthright citizenship, which is actually something that reversed his position from a few years ago when he was critical of Mitt Romney's hard line on immigration. But now Trump has gone way further than Romney ever did in 2012. He's calling for an end to birthright citizenship in clear violation of the 14th Amendment, which quite clearly says that if you're born here, you're an American citizen. I mean, it's pretty unambiguous and pretty simple. And maybe the most disturbing part, I mean, Donald Trump is sort of our generation's speech, sort of running now as our generation's George Wallace, but focusing more on attacking Latinos than blacks, although he does some of both. But what's, I think, more disappointing is not that Trump's doing it. I think that's, we expect that from him, but that all the other Republican candidates are getting right in line and saying the same thing, or I should say almost all the other ones. Jeb Bush hasn't quite gone that far, but he did go and use the anchor baby slur. And, of course, across the spectrum, I mean, Scott Walker, Bobby Jindal, a whole bunch of other Republican candidates, Lindsey Graham, have come out and said, yeah, we should end birthright citizenship, which is just nuts. I mean, on top of being unconstitutional, it's impractical. But your thoughts on the whole debate over that issue, Naomi?
Well, I'd have to go longer than the hour. Yeah. Well, I guess it's okay to be an immigrant if you're a single woman and you marry a Republican white gentleman, as in the case of Donald Trump's two wives, or two of the three wives, or however many times he's been married, Melania, his current wife, and Ivana. So I guess it's okay for them to come over to the United States as long as they marry someone that's white and Republican and they don't count. But I just see it as being, you know, can absolutely racist and absolutely wanting them to keep, like you said, the comparison with George Wallace, to keep it as a white supremacy. They're saying things that are so cruel and so inhumane, and categorizing that as something that they are legally trying to do, that's legal. You know, what they're trying to do, they're, you know, it's, why is it so appalling? This is, you know, this is how it should be, because the minorities are taking away our jobs, the minorities are sucking our system, our minorities are sitting home collecting welfare. Our minorities are taking away all the good jobs. You know, the children are getting into colleges that are taking away the spots of the white students. So it's just, it's to not even say it's degrading, you know, it's degrading, it's dehumanizing, it's, and not to mention, like you said, it's unconstitutional. But like you said, just my last thought on especially Trump is, yes, they're all looking at the shiny object, which right now is Donald Trump. So he's making his platform on immigration. That's his you know, his shiny object of the moment that he's waving around. And so, yes, the other people are seeing how the other Republican candidates are seeing how he's being, how the people are responding to him. So they are saying, okay, well, that's what we're going to jump on too. Hey, we're like that too. We're racists too. We can say that too. Look at us. Look at us. We want to be popular too. And it has, you know, nothing to do with running a campaign, nothing with running on a platform of what you would do as president, other than shutting down the border, sending out drones, and spending billions of dollars on, essentially the Great Wall of China would be here in the United States, that's what they are all running on. So, that's, if they want to run themselves to the ground that way, more power to them. But it's just very disappointing to hear not just him, but like you said, others following suit.
Yeah, and the worst part about it, I think, is every year, I think since 2010, Congressman Steve King from Iowa, the racist who said, for every dreamer who gets a college education, there's 10 more or something like that, who have calves the size of cantaloupes that are drug mules or whatever. I mean, that every year in Congress or the last 4 or 5 years, he's always introduced a bill to end birthright citizenship. And at least up until now, it's always been pretty much laughed out of Congress. It doesn't make it through. It gets shut down by a majority of both parties. But now what's really disturbing is that Steve King and, Sheriff Joe Arpaio in Phoenix and Sheriff Paul Babiou and those kind of demagogic, nativist, anti-immigrant people, I guess I could throw Tom Tancredo in there too, those really rabid anti-immigrant people, now their position against ending birthright citizenship is becoming the mainstream position within the Republican Party, at least within the presidential field. I mean, it's not only Donald Trump, like I said, Scott Walker, Bobby Jindal, which is kind of ironic because he was born to parents on U.S. soil and that were non-citizens. I mean, they were here legally, I believe, but they weren't citizens. So in a sense, he's the beneficiary of birthright citizenship. But unlike Michelle Obama, when Bobby Jindal gets through the door, he wants to slam it in the face of the person behind him because he got his, and, forget everybody else who has to walk through that door. I mean, it's a very different mentality. I mean, with the Republicans, it seems like this Machiavellian kind of, well, I got mine, the rest of you are on your own. And so Trump is demagoguing the issue, and the rest of the Me Too Brigade is like, oh, yeah, since he's doing so well in the polls and drawing big audiences, I hate brown people. It's bad for the country. I mean, whatever else could be said about George W. Bush, at least he didn't take that hardline stance on immigration. He kind of, it was one of the few areas where he was at least somewhat thoughtful as a president. And so, we have this weird, and even Reagan passed an amnesty bill. So we have this weird situation in the Republican Party where liberals or progressives like myself are almost waxing nostalgic for George W. Bush or Ronald Reagan for being at least, almost on the edges of reasonable. But now we've gone into this borderline insanity, and I don't mean it's marginally insane. I mean they're insane about how to patrol the borderline of the United States, and their positions are almost unconscionable. It's just really disturbing to see this sort of know-nothing nativism taking such firm hold in the Republican Party, and I hope it costs them the election next year. I mean, I hope now when it comes to a general election, whoever the Republican candidate is so poisoned by this that they can't win an election. But I'm not so optimistic that I think that's a sure thing. I mean, I know how quickly people can be manipulated by this kind of thing, so it's a little bit frightening. I don't know. Did you have additional thoughts on that?
Well, I think that the one thing that the Democrats do very well is that they do focus on getting people to register to vote and then getting people to go to the polls. I'm not going to say that people follow through with that, but I do think that there is a strong movement in the Democratic Party, liberals, progressives, especially grassroots organizations and small clubs, they are pushing to get people to register to vote, and then they do push out the GOTV, the Get Out the Vote, whereas Republicans are trying to do everything they can to block voting and, you know, make it as difficult or as impossible for the maybe minorities to vote or people in rural areas that, you know, have to come up with, you know, every five pieces of documentation before they're able to vote. Are they, you know, taking away days to vote, taking away opportunities and places to vote that would be helpful to maybe minority, specifically minority voters? And I think that that will hold true and hold to get voters, especially minority voters, out to vote, because no matter what, you know, I don't get it. If you're a minority and you're really struggling, why you would vote Republican? But I do hope, and I do feel hopeful. I'll say it that way. I do feel hopeful that because the Democrats do reach out to all voters, especially minority voters, especially those in a rural area who have difficulty, they try to make things easy. They try to uphold the laws, the voting laws that are in place, because they're there for a reason, to make it equal for everybody to try to get to vote. It's a right for us to vote, so we're trying to implement getting people out to vote. And I think that will help in the end. With 2016, I definitely think that is a key that the Democrats, grassroots movements need to, don't forget to focus on. Don't forget that is what's going to get people to the polling places. So I think voter registration is key to keeping a Democrat in the White House, and I definitely think that you know, we keep hammering and showing the public what their stance is on immigration, and I think it'll take care of itself. Not just that one issue, of course, but I think that's definitely, they haven't found their spot with minorities. They keep saying that they're going to turn a new leaf and they're going to reach out to minorities, and this absolutely is the opposite of that. So I don't see how the majority of minorities that vote Democrat, how they would turn to vote Republican, or how, if you haven't registered to vote yet, that you would register as a Republican. So I don't know if that answered your question, but I really wanted to, you know, to get that out there, that registering to vote and getting people out there to the polls, I think, is one of the key components to making sure that it kind of crumbles that immigration platform that they're running on.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because one thing that was said after the 2012 election, when the Republicans did their autopsy, is that they had to do a better job of attracting Latino voters or not turning off minorities. I mean, they don't have to win that vote, but they had to do better than, like I mentioned, George Bush earlier. He got about 40% of the Hispanic vote in 2004, which is pretty good for a Republican. I mean, he still got creamed by 20 points, but I mean, he kind of kept them from running the table there. Well, by the time Romney ran in 2012, they were getting in the neighborhood of 25% of Latino vote on exit polls. So that's a huge drop. And they said, well, you can't win an election with that low of a number. Well, at the rate they're going now, it's going to drop from 25 to 12%. And so in that sense, the Republicans aren't going to be able to win states like Colorado and Nevada and probably even Florida. I mean, they're going to have to try to, I don't know if they're going to have a chance. They're going to have to do something in Pennsylvania or Ohio, somewhere where they're not going to get sunk by Latino voters. So it really, really narrows the map for them. And so it could be their undoing. And so that's probably a positive aspect of it. And one other point on the whole birthright citizenship thing too, is, you know, a lot of small government conservatives are going, rah, rah, yeah, we're behind Trump, or, you know, yeah, forget those, you know, people coming and having their babies here and stuff. But from a logistical standpoint, any birthright citizenship it's not a practical thing to do. For one, you know, I mean, Trump's idea of deporting 12 million people is undoable. But beyond that, the birthright citizenship thing, you would basically create a system where everybody's not only going to have to prove they were born here, but they have to prove that their parents were, and so on and down. And so what are you going to have? I mean, immigration and customs enforcement people in every hospital, police in the maternity ward to, you know, not only find out whether to issue a certificate for the kid, but where the parents were born. And, you know, I mean, this hasn't been thought through, and I don't think it's meant to be thought through, because it's really just a demagoguing way of rounding up votes from racists and, you know, people that are angry or whatever, hardcore nativists and xenophobes. But I mean, from a practical matter, it's not doable, and it's not very conservative either. I mean, the same people that scream bloody murder about the idea of having a national ID card, well, essentially, if you mandate birthright citizenship, you're going to have that. I mean, that's what they're really, what it comes down to. So I don't know if they've thought that through, but it's certainly, in addition to being unconstitutional, it's incredibly impractical. And so it just goes to show that the Republicans, you know, they're not really behind thoughtful legislation anymore. They're just behind tweaking the base or trying to get people all excited about stuff that they have no intention or no ability of doing. Or if they do it, I mean, it's going to be a catastrophe. And I suppose they're capable of doing that. I mean, Sam Brownback and Bobby Jindal, I guess, have proved that, you know, Republicans say that government doesn't work, and when they get elected, they prove it. But I mean, you know, it's like, it's just bad news in so many different ways. And like I said, I guess we didn't mention yet too, I mean, Ben Carson's on the bandwagon as well, and he wants to do drone strikes on U.S. soil. I'm sorry.
Can I interrupt just for a second? I wanted to just follow up on the article that I think you and I read about in Talking Points memo. It was today's article. I just wanted to give a quick quote from the article that we're sharing. It's from Bill Stock, who is the president-elect of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. Basically what you said, the quote he says is, it becomes this sort of paper chase, and who is going to police this? How do you know if a child born in a U.S. hospital is a citizen or not? Are we going to have ICE agents in a maternity ward? It's all lovely to say that we are only targeting people who are born to illegal parents, but what that means is that everyone has to show that their parents were not illegally present. If we want to administer this fairly, there are white people who have undocumented parents. So we can't just say that we are not going to check for people who are white or African-American or have American accents. You have to check for everybody. How far back are you going to have to go? And who's, like he said, who's going to police this? This is just, for being conservative, this is not something that is going to be, you know, under, you know, in a budget. You know, it costs, the paper for this and the legal end of it is going to be astronomical. And so you'd have to basically have to have documentation and someone that will document at every, you know, every hospital. Any place where they can have a child born is where you're going to have to do this. It, like you said, it's a horrible idea. We'd have to pass a constitutional amendment, and the implications would go much, much further than just an immigration policy. And do we really want to revert back to the 1860s? Do we want to go back to the time when, you know, slavery was in our country, and when we had second-class citizens, when black slaves were not considered Americans, that were not considered citizens? Do we really want to go back to that kind of country? Were we proud of that? Is that a stain in our history, or is that something we want to have, but take, you know, piece it together? Well, we didn't like this part, but we do like this part. We don't like that, but we do like this. We shouldn't be happy, and we shouldn't be wanting to model any of it. It was all horrible. It was a big stain on our history, and we're so incredibly grateful that it came out on the other end. But it just boggles me that they're they're thinking we're protecting our country, we're taking our country back, we're moving the immigrants out and keeping it to ourselves so that everything stays healthy, nobody's bringing any germs from any other countries, we're not having people take over our, you know, our jobs or education, we're all keeping it amongst us. And, you know, us is who we are. Us is a nation of immigrants. You know, that's who our what our nation is. So for them to say that they can try and separate and that they want to start moving, you know, people to the back of the bus again is so incredibly frustrating, and it angers not just you and I, but so many people that, you know, what are they thinking? How does this come out of their mouth? And no one, they have all these head nodders behind them. Nobody's saying anything like, no, that's wrong. We don't want to be that country. That's not who we are. But they've got all these people behind them nodding and encouraging and thumbs upping that that's what they're rolling with right now. It's incredibly disappointing to know that that's, you know, that's what's out there. So that's all I wanted to say about that birthright citizenship before you went on to Ben Carson. I just wanted to point
that out. And I'm going a mile a minute, but and I think what you said is very important. And I think, you know, what's funny is Donald Trump keeps saying, make America great again. And I think some people think, oh yeah, like in 1992 or something. But when Trump says make America great again, he's talking about before the 14th Amendment. So he's talking about bringing us back to 1857 or something. It's like, oh yeah, make it great again. Where, you know, I mean, where we had slavery and the white people had it pretty good. I mean, that's not exactly what he's saying, but that's when you unpack his rhetoric and you take it back to where he wants to take us, he's really talking about a 19th century vision where privilege, racial privilege and class privilege are given priorities, and it's not an egalitarian nation. I mean, forget that. It's egalitarian for white people who own property, but, or at least for men. I mean, it's not even, you know, that's pre the 19th Amendment as well. But I mean, you know, that's the mindset that they're operating under, and it's disconcerting to say the least. And I think before I bring up Ben Carson, who's on that bandwagon too, I will mention that we are almost half past the hour, and so we're about 30 minutes in. We're talking about immigration and the Republican Party, but I did want to pitch a couple guests that we have coming up in September. We don't have anybody lined up yet for next week, but on September 4th, our guest will be James Kilgore. He is the author of Understanding Mass Incarceration, A People's Guide to the Key Civil Rights Struggle of Our Time. So I think that'll be particularly relevant, especially with matter and some of the other things being central to the political debate right now. That should be a timely interview. And then the following week, on September 11th, I guess, we will have John B. Diamond on, who's the co-author of the book Despite the Best Intentions, How Racial Inequality Thrives in Good Schools. Not to mention that I'm sure it thrives in bad schools as well. But, I mean, that should be an interesting interview. And maybe, Naomi, you could tell people where they can find us on social media as well, and then we'll get back to talking immigration.
Well, you can always find us on Facebook. Just type in Liberal Fix on your search engine, and that's our Facebook page. You can always follow us there. We also have our website, www.liberalfix.com, and you can listen to our archived shows. We try to get on live every Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific time. But we have a myriad of guests, and they're all archived on there, so you can listen to any of our past shows that you may have missed. And also, I wanted to point out that Keith is a full-time writer with Politicus USA, so you can look for his articles on Facebook, on his Facebook page, or also on the Politicus USA Facebook page. He writes full-time, and his articles are every day, and are posted every day. And sometimes he has two or three a day, so you can get kind of a feel for where he's coming from, and can always Facebook, friend him, or follow him on Twitter also is at Keith Breckus. So we are, like he said, we'll be on Friday with two really exciting guests. I'm looking forward to speaking with them.
Absolutely. And so I wanted to go back to, I guess, we've already mentioned that one of the Republicans' ideas of immigration reform is to shred the Constitution and get rid of the 14th Amendment. So that's not very practical. So is there anything more practical coming out of the GOP field? Well, Exhibit B is retired neurosurgeon Ben Carson, who probably should have stuck to brain surgery because I don't want to say this, but in terms of politics, he doesn't appear to be a brain surgeon, but I guess he is a brain surgeon. He's just not a political strategist or a compassionate person, or I'm not sure what to say, but he this week came down in favor of military weaponized drone strikes on American soil to root out, I guess, people suspected of crossing the border illegally. So if they go out to the desert and they see some encampment or something that looks like, you know, in Carson's mind, probably drug dealers, you know, doing something secret or whatever. But I mean, basically came out in favor of doing what we're doing in the Middle East, but doing drone strikes right here on American soil against people who are presumed to be illegal immigrants, which I guess would probably be Latino people walking around in the desert. Hopefully, you know, I mean, I don't know how he's going to determine which ones are here legally and which not, but regardless, dropping, you know, bombing people or doing military strikes against people who are non-combatants is should not be an option. I mean, come on, we're talking about killing children or killing people who are just trying to make a better life for themselves. I mean, you can have different positions on immigration policy. Maybe some people think we need to, you know, catch them and send them back across the border or whatever. Okay, that's fine, you know. I mean, that can be defended at least because the people get to live, but you can't just be out in the deserts, you know, strafing people from the sky. That's not an immigration policy. That's war crimes, as far as I'm concerned. War crimes in peacetime. I mean, because there is no war. but your thoughts on Mr. Carson's idea?
I would echo your sentiments. Also, he unfortunately thinks that having people, you know, humans walking around, not even knowing if they're immigrants or not, he's, you know, looking around and wanting and calling it, you know, a war. That this is how you need to respond to them. Right away, he's hitting, you know, reaching for the red phone and saying, yes, this is a war that we're fighting. We have to, you know, we have to be open to all types of ways to implement immigration. And if drones are one of them, then so be it. Where do these people, I don't understand where, you know, where humans end for them, where humans and non-humans begin. You know, where does that come in their thinking? You know, it, like you said, if nothing else, you're talking about families. You're talking about the problem of people having to come in secretly or coming in through different ways because we don't have a system that works. There isn't something that's in place that works. So we absolutely do need immigration reform. But to completely chop off our arm to get rid of to say that'll get rid of the problem, that does nothing. And again, you know, I hate to sound like a broken record, but when the GOP says, well, we're against the Affordable Care Act, well, we're against, you know, paying women equal pay for equal work, we're against X, Y, and Z, we're against immigration. Okay, well, what's your plan? What's your side of the coin? They don't have anything. They're just against it. They don't have anything that's thoughtful. They don't have anything that's humane. They don't have anything that is legal. Everything is just knee-jerk, get rid of it. Do away with it. We don't need it. We don't want it. It's that simple. Well, no, it's not that simple. And they have nothing to show for it. it's just more vitriol, more rhetoric, nothing substantial on the table. They vacillate back and forth, you know, and their language, you know, they can call it. Actually, let's do a quote here from, I'm sure one of your favorites, Keith, Jen, is it Mickelson, the Iowa radio host, and he's a
conservative, he's a winner,
crazy guy. his comprehensive immigration reform plan entails making undocumented immigrants property of the state. Property. Well, okay, I guess that means that's where you draw the line as they're human, because humans aren't property. So, okay, property of the state. And when his unconstitutional immigration plan was questioned, he asked, what's wrong with slavery? The 13th Amendment is what's wrong with slavery, and yet Mickelson actually used the 13th Amendment to justify enslaving Latino immigrants into state-mandated, quote, compelled labor. So they're calling these people property of the state. They're forcing them into compelled labor. They're talking about rounding them up, putting them in detention centers, making them property of the state. We give you a deadline to leave. If you don't leave, then you become owned by the state. Where is this coming from? This is horrible. And it's not new. This ugly, you know, racism rears its head every so often. It kind of stays dormant, and then something just pops up. And it's horrible. And like I said, it's all hatred. They are hateful conservative people who are pandering to their base of hateful conservative voters and thinking that this is going to solve our problems. All we need to do is kick all of the non-white people out and we're good to go. But no thought about what it would cost, what we would lose as a country. We would stand to lose a lot, and financially what it would cost us. So instead of trying to, they want to reinvent the wheel instead of trying to say, okay, well, this isn't perfect what we have, but it's better than sending drones out to Arizona and Texas and New Mexico and California and, you know, by the border of Mexico and just arbitrarily picking people off. So, yeah, that's what I think about it.
Yeah, no, and you're right. And Mickelson, or I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, and frankly, I don't care, but I mean...
Who cares?
The individual from Iowa, the radio host, he's also sort of a kingmaker in Iowa politics, him and Steve King. I guess it's literally a kingmaker of sorts. But, I mean, both of those guys, they're hardcore, rabid anti-immigrant people, and yet Iowa is the first state to hold the caucuses, and these are the people you have to suck up to if you want to do well in the state. So basically, you have Steve King, who wants to end birthright citizenship, and Dan Mickelson, who wants to go a step further and allow the state to enslave people who are unable to prove their to the satisfaction of the state or the authorities that that they have legal status to be here. He wants to make them slaves. I mean, this is just nuts. I mean, this doesn't sound like America. I mean, this is, you know, I don't like to throw the word around, but in this case, I mean, the Mickelson guy is literally advocating something akin to fascism. I mean, this is, you know, I mean, to have compelled forced labor camps. I mean, that's beyond just, you know, right wing foolishness. That's a recipe for fascism, for state compelled labor and to enslave people and make them wards of the state and force them to work, you know, at the barrel of a gun or whatever mechanism they're going to use to enforce that. That's beyond, that should not be part of our legitimate political debate in this country. That should be off the table. And yet it seems to be where we're headed, or what we've come to on the Republican side. And hopefully, you know, hopefully somebody in the party will come to their senses and put a stop to that. I don't know if there's anybody in the current GOP field who will. I know to some extent, I guess, Rubio and Kasich and Jeb Bush are a little less hardline than some of the others. but they're all sort of kind of following Trump's lead. I mean, there isn't anybody standing up and saying, boy, this guy's dead wrong. He's out of his mind. I mean, they're basically kind of, oh, yeah, me too, or, oh, well, he's a little over the top. I wouldn't go quite that far, but, and it's like, oh, my goodness, you know, there's not a voice of reason amongst them. 17 candidates and now one person can call out Trump on his immigration policy. Should point out that this policy is also, there's consequences whenever you demagogue an issue, you sort of create an environment where weak-minded individuals or people who are easily manipulated start to absorb your words and take the law into your own hands. And one of the most disturbing stories this week was of these two knuckleheads in Boston, a couple of South Boston men with criminal records to begin with, Scott and Stephen Leader. They brutally assaulted a 58-year-old Latino homeless man. Not just assaulted him, they urinated on him. They did all kinds of horrible things. It was just one of those kind of ridiculous crimes that leaves you scratching your head. And they are being held without bail, so obviously the judge found that the assault was just really extreme and unwarranted or whatever. But one of the individuals said, well, Donald Trump was right. We need to get all these illegals need to be deported. You know, they have to go. I mean, so here we have guys invoking Trump, and no, Trump didn't directly, you know, he didn't order the attacks. And so, you know, the individuals who did the attacks are responsible. But let's face it, Trump and others in the Republican Party created the environment where people start to get the motivation to think that they're somehow being patriots by doing that, by peeing on a homeless person and beating him to within inches of his life. And, you know, and one of these buffoons he spent a year in prison after 2001 for another hate crime. At that time, he beat up a Moroccan man inside a Dunkin' Donuts, a guy from Morocco. He beat him up and he shouted ethnic slurs, anti-Arab or anti-Muslim things at him, and accused his victim of being a terrorist. So, you know, obviously in 2001, the same guy was motivated by that anti-Islamic hysteria after the September 11th attack to think that he's a patriot for going and beating up this poor guy who was in a Dunkin' Donuts. I think the guy actually worked there, so he beat up an employee, you know, from Morocco. None of the 911 hijackers were from Morocco, by the way. You know, so, and now he's beating up Hispanic people in the alleys of Boston because he's drawn in by this hate speech that some of the presidential candidates are engaging in. And it's, you know, it's ugly. I don't know what else to say about that, you know, but we have to pull back from the brink and get more sensible dialogue going in this country about the immigration issue rather than stirring up ethnic hatred and getting people to engage in vigilante style ethnic cleansing. That's not okay.
Right.
Any thoughts on that, Naomi?
Well,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
Some people were inspired by Donald Trump to beat people up, that just says a lot about Donald Trump and the type of people that he's reaching. If people are not inspired,
I hear the words inspired by Trump, and I get scared.
instead of being inspired to register people to vote, or you know, helping out in you know other situations where you can start helping fellow humans, you go and rip off their blankets, urinate on them, and beat the crap out of them. That's inspirational. That's an inspirational movement. That's not something I want a part of. But I wanted to maybe as quickly as I can, I wanted to run through a couple of things that would help and things that the immigrants here contribute to. I know that, you know, we've heard about all these horrible things that they're doing and, you know, they're taking our jobs and et cetera, all these things that people are, the Republicans are saying. But, you know, actually, you know, what they're doing for our economy, you know, if we were able to have legalization and naturalization of undocumented immigrants, it would bolster their wages. And the annual income of unauthorized immigrants would be 15.1% higher within 5 years if they were granted legal status. All this, by the way, is coming from the Center for American Progress, is where I'm getting these facts from. I'm sorry, I'm losing my train of thought here. And in addition, if undocumented immigrants earned their citizenship, their wages would rise by an additional 10%. The wage increase would occur if legal status provides the undocumented legal protections and grants access to better jobs, promotes investments in education and training, and fosters small business creation. Immigration reform that includes a pathway to citizenship for undocumented immigrants in 5 years would increase the earnings of all American workers, by $618 billion over the next decade. Naturalized workers earn higher wages, consume more goods and services, and pay more taxes, which in turn creates economic growth. If the undocumented immigrants in our nation were granted legal status today and citizenship in 5 years, the 10-year cumulative increase in U.S. gross domestic product, or our GDP, would be $1.1 trillion. You know, there's more. I'll list this one. I thought this was very important. If undocumented immigrants gained legal status and citizenship, they would provide a net $106.4 billion contribution to Social Security over the next 36 years, the same time period when retiring baby boomers will place the greatest strain on the system. These contributions to the Social Security system would support 2.4 million American retirees. Immigrants who are currently living in the United States without legal status could make a net contribution of $155 billion to Medicare over the next 30 years. Their contribution would extend the solvency of the Medicare Trust Fund by 4 years. You know, most of the immigrants who come to the country, to our country, are not coming here because they want to sit in a house and watch TV and watch reruns of Maury Povich and eat ice cream. Most of them that are here are escaping a country that they're living in, which is horrific. Maybe it's torn apart by war. Maybe they're trying to provide a better life for their daughters who are being raped, who are being mutilated physically, who are, maybe their children are being trafficked, you know, being human trafficking, involved in human trafficking. Maybe they're being persecuted for their religious beliefs. They're coming here and they're wanting their children to have a better chance than when they were children, because obviously they're coming here as adults with their children. Maybe they want to continue and further their education and they can't because they're in a country that does not allow women to have higher education or go to school at all. They come here and they are enrolling in our colleges, our high schools, our elementary schools to become better people, to better their lives, to learn a trade, to learn how to provide for themselves. They're not looking here and looking at, oh, we can get welfare. Oh, we can get food stamps. Oh, we can be on government assistance forever. No. They're trying to open small businesses. They're trying to open up and contribute. They want to pay what they're supposed to pay. They want to do the right thing. They want to do the legal, pay into the legal system. They want to be here and not have to look over their shoulder. And like President Obama has said, we need to take them out of the shadows. They can contribute so much more if we fix the kinks, if we work things out and look at them as humans, look at them as families, look at them as people. That's what will happen. Trying to rip apart the 13th and 14th Amendment and rejuggle the Constitution for our own self-worth, it's not going to happen. It's not who we are. It absolutely is not who we are.
Absolutely. And I think it's important that people understand the benefits of immigration, and it's just, I don't know, it's just disheartening to see the rhetoric going in the opposite direction. I guess one thing too, mentioning the attacks in Boston, Trump's first response was, "My supporters are passionate." He's since, after 2 days, since finally said that what they did wasn't a good thing. But it took him 2 days. I mean, hello, what they did was awful. And I don't know if you knew the whole details at the beginning, but I don't describe that kind of hate crime as passion. That's I guess you could say it's passion, but it's not the kind of passion you would promote or encourage. And so that was just disconcerting. But one other thing I wanted to, we talked a lot about immigration here and about Latino immigrants and stuff, but I think there is a point where Trump is really, this is a white supremacist campaign. And what I mean by that is he's definitely appealing to racist voters, as is most of the Republican Party. And I think he made that clear today when he sort of linked two issues that I don't think most people would link. He was on a radio show in Alabama, of all places, and he drew a big rally there. But he said, he mentioned that when you look at Baltimore, when you look at Chicago and Ferguson, a lot of these areas, a lot of these gang members are illegal immigrants. They're going to be gone. We're going to get them out so fast, out of this country so fast. Well, a couple points there. First of all, the implication that people that were fighting for social justice after a pattern of police abuse and after very specific police brutality incidents, first of all, they're not all gang members. These are members of the community. That isn't to say that in Baltimore and Ferguson there might not have been gang members at the protest, because certainly that's possible, but these were not gang-organized protests. They're members of the community. So that's the first point, is he's trying to sort of discredit the entire Black Lives Movement and social justice movements by dismissing them as gang members. The other point, though, is, of course, he knows full well that, that the people in those neighborhoods are mostly African-American and they're mostly citizens of the United States. These aren't illegal immigrants at the Chicago and Ferguson protests, for the most part. The Baltimore and Ferguson protests. But I think rhetorically there's a link there that he's trying to do. It's basically trying to eliminate the citizenship even of Black Americans, sort of to rhetorically place them in the other category, like they're not real Americans. The people in Baltimore and Ferguson, just like the people crossing the Rio Grande or the Arizona desert, are not real citizens. The only people who have claims to the rights and legitimacy of Americanness and American exceptionalism and to make America great again are white people. I mean, that's really what Trump is saying if you break it down. And so when he did that, obviously he knows that a lot of people he wasn't talking about are illegal immigrants, but he's trying to delegitimize them. And he's even done that to the president of the United States, because, of course, Donald Trump is a birther. So he's even trying to say that Barack Obama doesn't belong here. He's not a real American. He's born in Kenya or I guess some birthers think Indonesia, whatever, but it wasn't in the U.S. So he's basically trying to eliminate a whole not just Latinos, but African-Americans as well. All minorities are sort of off the table. He's definitely appealing to racist, angry white voters who feel threatened by the changing demographics of this country. And Trump is totally going for that demographic to be his base. And, if he gets the nomination, that's where he's headed. But, thank God there's probably enough minority voters to make sure he gets defeated in a general election, but it's sure going to be ugly for the primaries, because at this point they can get away with it, because in the Republican primary, what he's saying is working, and it probably will continue to work for a while. Your thoughts on that?
I agree.
Are you still there? I don't know if
I'm sorry.
On a mute button. Go ahead.
I'm here. No, sorry. I was just going to say quickly, I agree. I think somebody's going to have to get away from the flock. Someone's going to have to distance themselves with reality and with reasonability and get away from that. Because I think after a while, even his, you know, most passionate followers will tire of that. We can't just talk about immigration. We can't just say we're going to get rid of all the non-white people and our country's going to be better. No, that's not what's wrong. That's not all that's wrong with our country. So to lump everything in and say this is the way I'm going to win. And hello, people that we all vote, or most of us vote. We should be voting. And so he's talking to people that are his potential voters. I mean, okay, so maybe blacks aren't going to vote higher for, more higher for him, but they're going to maybe vote Republican. And so, you're attacking a vote. It's not his voter base, but you're attacking voters. These are people that want to hear things about the economy. They want to hear things about women's rights. They want to hear about going to war with Iran. They want to hear about nuclear disarmament or climate change. They don't want to hear about just getting rid of immigrants. I mean, there are intelligent people in the Republican voting base, is what I'm saying. And so the intelligent and compassionate Republicans that are out there, the moderates, are going to say, enough. This isn't what we stand for. It's not, as a Republican, what I stand for. Maybe I'm fiscally conservative, and I don't maybe agree with all these social programs, but I don't think that we should go around saying that we're going to drone people. I don't think that we should say eliminating black people and non-white people is going to solve our country's problems. And I don't know that maybe Trump and the others are saying that specifically, but to me that's what I'm hearing, because that's what they're focusing on. But
there's a problem to some extent, because even Bill O'Reilly and Eric Erickson have kind of called them out. So like you said, I don't necessarily want to call those guys reasonable Republicans, but there are Republicans who recognize that rhetoric is just too much, or that policy isn't where they need to go. So hopefully you're right about that.
I think it's going to take somebody. I mean, I've said this before with you. I really was hopeful for somebody like John Huntsman to come up, but that's just not going to happen. I mean, they eat those people and spit them out, in shreds. And they just, the sensible people that are Republicans don't stand a chance. I don't know when that cycle is going to break, but it's the people that are the screamers, the haters, the ones that are saying the ugliest things the loudest. They're the ones that draw the crowds. So I don't know. Well, be very interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, maybe with any luck, if the Republicans do go for a hardline candidate this year and they get really drubbed in 2016, maybe they'll learn their lesson. I think they keep sort of fooling themselves, because they do well in the midterms, so then they go back to crazy for a while, and then they get stomped in the presidential elections. And so, I don't know how this is going to play out. And maybe, some people have suggested that right now people are flirting with the Trump candidacy because they're not actually voting yet, but that when it comes to actually voting, a lot of Republicans will sort of get cold feet. That kind of thing happened a little bit in 2012 with front runners like Michelle Bachmann and Newt Gingrich and Herman Cain, who all took their turns. But when it actually came to voting, people kind of sobered up or lost interest and kind of moved back a little towards sanity, if you can call Mitt Romney sane. I mean, compared to those other people, I guess he was. So maybe we'll see that again. But I do think there's a huge issue here. I think the Republicans are definitely shooting themselves in the foot on the immigration issue. It's bad for their party, but it's also bad for America, and hopefully we can put a squash to it. This election cycle, sooner rather than later, would be good, but whenever it happens, it'll happen. And I guess on that note, we are out of time, so we will see everybody again next week. We want to thank you all for listening. Be safe and be kind to your neighbor, and we'll catch you in a week.